Welcome to Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio, channel 869.
Changing Destiny is proudly brought to you by WEM Media, right here on Radio Today. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
Welcome to Changing Destiny. My name is Paul Pereira. Now, one of the pillars of a free or democratic society is the concept of the rule of law, but it's often a misunderstood one. It does not mean that we live under lots of laws, otherwise Parliament, which is busily passing laws every session, would be doing its job just by doing that. No, the concept of the rule of law is that law applies to everybody, whether you are peasant or king. And in this program, about once a quarter, we sit down and we have a look at how things are going with that. How is the law being applied, and particularly to the high and mighty? But also, how is the law applied to people who don't have resources? And we do that by inviting the chairman of IRS Forensic Investigators, and that's Chad Thomas. And he joins us again today, and we'll be chatting with Chad just after we've listened to Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror.
Make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collarbone, my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids on the street. Enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them eat? A summer's disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one-man show. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one yet to know.
Starting with the man in the mirror. Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny, and tonight we're chatting with Chad Thomas, who's the chairman of IRS Forensic Investigations. Chad, welcome back.
Always a pleasure. Feels like a second home.
Still my favorite studio.
Chad, we're talking a little bit about the rule of law and the fact that law applies to everybody, that there are no favorites. That's the concept. And as a result, we all have the same protection, that there is an equality of our citizenship. And it seems to me sometimes this doesn't happen. One of the cases that is around at the moment is that a woman who was in the service of the state, she worked for the National Prosecuting Authority, Glynis Breitenbach, and subsequently she left and she sits on the opposition benches of Parliament, where she serves for the Democratic Alliance, and suddenly she's facing prosecution herself. Is this not a case of state resources being used to persecute opponents?
You're really putting me in the hot seat and you get me into a lot of trouble today. Glynis Breitenbach is my least favorite person in South Africa. And I say that because Glynis Breitenbach, as head of the NPA, I believe, or the specialized unit that she was in, which was the Specialized Commercial Crimes Unit, which was a joint SAPS-NPA project, I believe that she really let down a lot of complainants. You just have to look at certain cases that failed miserably under her watch. ShareMax, you had a pensioner go to the ShareMax head office quite recently, and he blew his brains out on the staircase outside because ShareMax has never been prosecuted correctly. It's been a docket that sat with her for years and years and years.
What is the ShareMax story?
ShareMax was it's a glorified Ponzi scheme. I'm not sure we get sued for saying that, but it's been out there long enough that they took pensioners' money. It was meant to be invested in various property projects. It was a property syndication organization, but it turned out to be that the guys at the helm were buying themselves yachts. The one guy had the most incredible yacht anchored just off Egypt, and they had game farms worth tens of millions of rands. And I think a lot of people were duped. A lot of people lost a lot of money. And as I said, it culminated in somebody last year standing on the steps of the head office and blowing their brains out. And the case had been sitting in Glynis Breitenbach's office for many, many years and nothing happened. Then, of course, Tannenbaum happened on her watch. Nothing happened with him. The construction cartel happened on her watch. Nothing happened except that she gave blanket immunity to the directors of Stefanuti Stocks. Why she gave them Section 204s, we'll never know. She's not there to answer to it. And then, of course, there was the rumblings of her relationships with big business. And it takes me back to the political side. You remember that marriage that lasted all of a day or two between Akgang and the DA? Now, that marriage purportedly was at the behest of none other than Natie Kirsch. And he said, you two must merge, otherwise I'm pulling my money. And he's one of the biggest donors. And you must remember, the only thing that the ANC, the DA, and the EFF agree on is keeping their donors secret. So Natie Kirsch funded her defense because she was then accused at a later stage.
Whose defense?
Glynis Breitenbach. Glynis Breitenbach was suddenly out the blue accused of impropriety, etc., deleting personal emails off her computer, and she was charged internally. She had a disciplinary inquiry, which led to a disciplinary hearing, and she was represented by a very senior silk in South Africa. And everybody said, how can you afford this person? You know, it's extremely expensive. And the inference she made was that she had rebonded or sold off one of her properties, and that's how she paid. It later came out that he had donated 6 million rand to the F.W. de Klerk Foundation. The F.W. de Klerk Foundation, in turn, paid her legal fees, but this had never come out. When it did come out, the F.W. de Klerk Foundation failed to mention it came from Natie Kirsch, and only later did it come out that Natie had actually funded it. Now, Natie's got business interests throughout Southern Africa, and the Commercial Crimes Unit is there specifically to investigate major, major commercial crimes involving corporates, etc. When we talk about the emails that were deleted, I saw some of the emails that she had been communicating with various parties. The one party she'd been communicating with was a franchisee of Teasers, and it was when Lolly Jackson had been killed, and there was now the estate, and he wanted some or other legal wrangling to keep his Teasers in Silverton out of the estate, and it was quite convoluted. But she was representing this person whilst in the employ of the NPA, whilst there was an ongoing case of by both SARS and the Specialized Commercial Crimes Unit into the activities of Teasers and the alleged tax evasion that was in the hundreds of millions of rands. Now, that sort of conflict, I don't know. So we believe that some of the emails that may have been deleted, and unfortunately for her, they were captured on other servers, may have been the ones between her and this person, may have been between her and Natie Kirsch. But there was so much more that came out in the investigation, such as the time she allegedly, on the taxpayer's bill, booked a flight to Cape Town as part of an official investigation down in Cape Town. Meanwhile, she was going down to interfere in a friend of hers' child's court case, who had been arrested allegedly for drunken driving. And she allegedly then interfered with that court process to get that child off. So there's a lot there. And as I said, the rumblings were long before Richard Mdluli was suspended as head of crime intelligence. Her inquiry, her hearing, had nothing to do with her being victimized because of Richard Mdluli. It was to do with the fact that she has to answer to certain things. Now, one thing you must remember, there's a lot of outside interest in ensuring regime change in South Africa, and that money has to come from somewhere. And when you see people like Linus Breitenbach being number 8 on the DA's list and becoming the Shadow Minister of Justice, which has got a cloud hanging over her, one has to ask, is the DA as clean as they make themselves out to be? Because they're very, very quick to point fingers at the other parties.
When we talk about current court cases, that's a case that's coming up. But a case that's just come to an end, and which we discussed last time, was of our friend Mr. Krajicek.
Well, Radovan Krajicek has now been sentenced to an effective 35 years imprisonment for the kidnapping, the dealing in drugs, the attempted murder, which came as a result of the torture, the pouring of the hot water over the person's head, etc.
I mean, 35 years for attempted murder seems a lot.
You know what? If you look at the quantity of drugs that were supposedly involved, because they were never actually caught with the actual drugs, the kidnapping, etc., they gave the maximum, and they were sending a message. He made a mockery of our justice system. He made a mockery of the judge. He even threatened the judge on the first day of sentencing by saying, oh, don't you live in Bedford View? But there's so much more to the Krajicek story that needs to come out. But believe it or not, of course, there's a link once again back to Glynis Breitenbach, because everything in South Africa seems to be linked. And then, of course, is his involvement in the Lolly Jackson murder. And I must be honest, I believe George Lucas when George Lucas said he was an innocent bystander when Radovan Krajicek pulled the trigger on Lolly Jackson, just as much as I believe that Joe Mabaso was present, and so was Cyril Beaker. Cyril Beaker is now dead, and Joe Mabaso is no longer the head of crime intelligence. But the relationship between Joe Mabaso as a general, head of crime intelligence, with Krajicek needs to still be investigated. The fact that Krajicek's wife and Mabaso's wife were both partners in the company still has to be investigated. But of course, the tie back to Breitenbach is the fact that he was trying to get money laundered into South Africa via Lolly Jackson, and that was the investigation undertaken by SARS and the Specialized Commercial Crimes Unit. And then, of course, Breitenbach allegedly looked after the interests of one of the franchisees of Teasers. That was the cornerstone
of Lolly's. What happens to Mr. Krajicek now?
Well, he's still, look, there's an appeal process that he's trying to explore. There's even the Constitutional Court. I think he's going to tie everybody up. His mom's got a lot of money. She's one of the richest women in the Czech Republic. She owns a major printing works in Prague. She literally prints money. And I'm not joking. There were allegations at a time that she was printing counterfeit. I think it's the kroon that they use, because they're not on the euro. But he still has to be tried or charged as well. For other murders, Cyril Beaker, there must have been an involvement. Lutagan, there must have been an involvement. Sam Issa, we know for a fact there was an involvement. Mark Andrews, the rugby player. Ian Hubert, the lawyer. There were so many people that died on that man's watch. It's unbelievable. And these are just the ones we know about.
He would go probably to that maximum security prison down in southern KZN.
Yeah, Kokstad. Kokstad is our real CMAX, unlike the Pretoria pseudo CMAX. And he has been held there since there was word of him wanting to escape from Zonavata. But that, I must be honest, I believe there's more to that story as well.
Tell me about these prisons. So we've got a series of private prisons, and then we've got the state prisons.
We've got private prisons.
They're all state, but
we've got some that are run by private organizations. The one in Bloem is run by G4S, which is one of the biggest security companies in the world. It's a British-owned company. We've then, of course, got most of ours run by DOC, Department of Correctional Services. Kokstad is most probably the most secure prison. I think he'll serve out his time there. But there's so much that needs to be answered. He came into South Africa with a false name, with a fake passport from Seychelles. He'd allegedly paid upwards of $25 million in Seychelles for them never to extradite him in respect of the Interpol red notice, the fact that he'd been found guilty in absentia in the Czech Republic. He lands in South Africa and coincidentally lands up in a cell with George Lucas, who then introduces him to Joe Mabaso. That's all far too coincidental for me. And then, of course, is the allegations that he was paying some seriously senior people in government to keep him here. And that's why he had that reign of terror. We all knew he was behind it. He was never charged. Every time they picked him up, he got off on a technicality. And now the rumor mongering is that when he stopped paying for protection, when he ran out of money locally and he couldn't get money from mom overseas, that's when his protection stopped, and that's why he was arrested. And that's why I still believe that with him now being convicted, there's a lot of people out there that are afraid of what he's going to say. And perhaps, and I say this perhaps with a very big perhaps, and I don't know whether I should say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think that the story of him trying to escape has been blown out of proportion. Yes, the man would want to escape. Yes, the man escaped from the Czech Republic. But in South Africa, finding weapons in cells would be a very sad indictment of the fact that he's such a high-profile prisoner. How did that firearm get in there, plus all the phones, plus everything else? And I must be honest, I think we're getting set up so that when he does get shot during an escape attempt, we're going to say, okay, well, we knew he was going to escape. But personally, I think there's a lot of people that would prefer to have him shut up before he comes out with who it was he was paying protection to.
We're chatting with Chad Thomas, the chairman of IRS Forensic Investigations, and we will continue doing that just after we've listened to Johnny Clegg's Scatterlings.
Oh, baby, mama.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny with Paul Pereira and Chad Thomas. Chad, we've spoken about high-profile cases. Let's talk a bit about ordinary folk. Cold cases. Tell us of a couple of those where people are utterly reliant on the state for justice to be done. What extent do we have cold case files just sitting there?
Well, I call it justice denied, and it's a project that IRS is involved in now. What we were doing previously is we would take on a certain amount of pro bono work every year, and a lot of it was commercial, organized crime orientated. And obviously we sponsored local police stations, we sponsored community policing forums, etc. And then we decided to take a long, hard look and see where we should rather use our infrastructure and our resources. And it came to me that there's a lot of people where justice has been denied, specifically in the rural areas. Now, you started the show by talking about peasants to kings, and we've seen in South Africa that even if you're a king, you can be prosecuted. But the peasants at the bottom aren't seeing justice. And it's very, very, very sad because you've got cases where, for example, we represent a lady in Harding on a pro bono basis. Her mom was found in a gutted house. They thought the house had burnt down while she was sleeping. But it then came out during the autopsy that she'd had her throat slit. And obviously they couldn't prove it, but based on the position of the body, etc., she may have also been raped, but they will never know because they couldn't do a full autopsy because of the condition of the body. But that case has been cold now for 6 years. We've got the media involved. The Sunday Tribune ran with an article on it. We've communicated to the police, who had closed the docket, to say, look, we're doing a media campaign to try to get it out there that this woman was murdered and her children need closure. Because the closure is the biggest thing. Because if people don't have closure, it impacts on their life in every single way possible forever, unless it's closed. Another case we're working, which has received massive publicity in Johannesburg, in The Citizen, in The Star, in all the local newspapers on 8 and 7, was the disappearance, or rather the kidnapping, of Nazir Mohammed some 3 years ago.
Yes, that's had a lot of... Where is Nazir?
We don't know. We had the Victim Identification Unit, Brigadier Ress. I would like to thank Brigadier Ress and her team. They came out with the canine search and rescue. We identified two areas where we believe could render clues to what happened. We've searched the one area. It was quite near his dealership, his car dealership in Jewell Street.
What is the background story for those who haven't picked up the press coverage?
Nazir Mohammed was a car dealer in Jewell Street. He had an altercation with a chap that was responsible for repairing his vehicles before they went on sale, you know, to make sure the cars were spiffy, etc. And he basically went to JP Police Station and said, this guy's cannibalizing my cars. One of his mechanics has come to me and has admitted that this guy's been stealing spares, etc. And he was arrested. And while he was incarcerated for 3 or 4 days, or however long it was, while he was in the cells, a guy came past the dealership and said to Nazir, watch out, they're going to get you. And when they came out the following week, lo and behold, Nazir disappeared. There was one phone call to the family demanding a ransom, and after that, there was nothing whatsoever. Two of the people that worked for this particular mechanic have subsequently been arrested, charged, found guilty of being in possession of his cell phone as well as two of his cars. But they've never been charged for his murder, which is quite strange because in South Africa we do have case law where there have been people charged for murder where there wasn't a body. And that was the famous case of the female police officer whose lover was accused of murdering her. And they recently did find the body, and he was found guilty. And lo and behold, the body was found in the foundations of his house he was building at the time. But he was found guilty prior to them finding the body. These guys, we've identified another area we need to search. It's a very, very, very big area. It's in a rural area. So the resources that we need and the infrastructure that we need, the police are providing, but it's a very, very big project.
It's a long time.
But we're not going to rest. I met with the family, and it was absolutely heartbreaking to sit and talk to them, and his room stays the same, his cupboard's still full of his clothes, and it's heartbreaking, I'll be quite honest with you. So we've now got this project. It's called Justice Denied, and we're taking on pro bono work for people that can't get closure, they can't afford the services of a private investigator, and we now assisting. We're using the media, and the media have been great. The media have really helped us with this. And we use our radio show. We also have a radio show on a Monday, which is only crime-orientated to get the message out there. And we're really pushing to get cases like these closed. There's just not enough private investigators, or I prefer to call them independent investigators, out there. And a lot of them are not willing to do cases on a pro bono basis.
Can I just
but
ask
hopefully
about,
I'll set a pattern.
Asking about that sort of work that you do, the independent investigation work, To what extent is that regulated and well monitored? Because the reason I ask is that's just almost opens the door to snoops.
Well, this is what concerns us the most. A lot of people are unaware that they have to be vetted. A lot of ex-police officers with a tape recorder and a camera think that they can be PRs. We're not PRs in that sense of the word. IRS, for example, does not take on domestic cases. So if any of your listeners are thinking of phoning me to find out if their husband or wife is cheating, we don't do that. Those are the smaller guys, but you have to be registered with PCRA. PCRA is the same organization that governs security officers in South Africa, so you have to have a clean credit, a criminal record rather, you have to have your fingerprints taken, you have to pay your fees, you have to have a fund in place, a fidelity fund, you have to have insurance in place. But I would say that maybe upwards of 60% of PRs out there are unregistered, which is a criminal offense, and it's also a criminal offense to employ them. To do work for you, because the onus is on you to do a due diligence to make sure that they are registered with PCRA. If not, you're both guilty of an offence. You cannot hire somebody who's not registered. But PCRA is so busy monitoring and accrediting over 400,000 security officers that they don't have much time to come into our industry and vet our industry. But you'll find a lot of law firms now have a forensic division. A lot of accounting firms have a forensic division. But IRS is unique in that all of the staff are ex-professionals, either from the intelligence sphere or the police sphere, and we concentrate primarily on financial crime, which is quite broad, and on organized crime. So we look at racketeering case, we look at money laundering.
What is organized crime? We hear the term all the time.
Organized crime is as it says. It's not an opportunistic crime. It's not a crime of passion. It's not a contact crime. It's a crime where people have sat down and they've planned how they're going to take on various organizations. I would give you an example. I would say that the construction cartel, and once again, I'm coming back to Glynis Breytenbach, and she must probably hate me even more tonight, and I'm expecting a summons or a lawyer's letter tomorrow. But the construction cartel, in my mind, is organized crime. They colluded to take as much money from the Treasury as possible, to make sure that their billing was similar or that their pricing was similar, so that they would all get a piece of the pie when it came to the infrastructure development for 2010, when it came to the road development, when it came to the development of the stadia. That, to me, is organized crime at its worst, because the collusion there impacted on our Treasury. If you look at the companies that colluded to fix the bread price, that is disgusting. Bread is the staple for so many people, and to fix the price of bread for your profits, it's shocking. So big business has got a lot to answer for. When people say fraud doesn't kill, I laugh in their face. I say, what about the man who blew his brains out because he couldn't feed his family on the steps of ShareMax? What about the Aurora miner that ate Rattix because he couldn't feed his family? Of course fraud kills.
We've been chatting with Chad Thomas of IRS Forensic Investigations, as we do every quarter, and I look forward to the next one. It's always a great show, and it's always very insightful. Thank you, Chad, and thank you, listeners, for joining me, Paul Pereira, on Changing Destiny. And please do the same thing at the same time next week, right here on Radio Today. Goodbye.